You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning. It's what day is it, John?
Tuesday,
June 24th. Many thanks. And we are talking about the housing bill, the rescue housing bill currently in Congress. And we're also talking about oil prices. You don't get more basic than that, housing and oil. And what's going on in Nigeria today really has a lot to do with rising gas prices at your pump. Nigeria is the fourth largest importer of oil to the United States, but continued militant attacks on Nigeria pipelines has triggered major shortages there. They're down about 20% in production since last year, but the militants have agreed to a ceasefire that is set to begin today. Carola Hoyas reports for the Financial Times. She joins us this morning. And Carola, this ceasefire going to hold?
That's the million-dollar question. I'm relatively pessimistic. I think the fundamentals of Nigeria are still very poor. I don't think any of the grievances really can be turned around in any short period of time. And we've witnessed years of these kind of issues. So, yes, I think maybe it'll hold for a little while, but I don't think that you'll be able to turn around the situation in Nigeria that has caused these attacks in the short term.
Carola, what I don't understand is Nigeria has been a poor country for a long time with rich oil reserves. Why have the militants been so potent, particularly in the past couple of months?
Well, as the oil price goes up, the interruption of any kind of oil supply, in particular in this tight market, becomes a bigger news story, a bigger issue. So the power of the militants has increased. If we'd had lots of extra oil to put on the market, if the Saudis were able to just say, right, you know, you've lost some oil from Nigeria, but we'll just fill that gap for you, that would be one thing. You wouldn't see an immediate impact in the price and front page stories on the Financial Times. So I think the militants are very aware of their newfound power.
And as you just noted, you're talking about headlines. Obviously, the oil companies are paying attention. The financial markets are paying attention. How does that violence affect the global oil prices that we're seeing today?
Well, today we've got a very tight demand-supply picture. So any drop, whether it is in terms of supplies from Iraq or Nigeria or Venezuela, or for that matter from the U.S., you know, we're in the hurricane season in the Gulf of Mexico, and we know what happened a couple of years ago in that neck of the woods. And, of course, it was a great human tragedy, but it also drove oil and gas prices up substantially because refineries and oil platforms were affected and therefore also supply. So not only Nigeria, but around the world, if you've got shut-ins and shutdowns of oil pipelines, of facilities, you will see an immediate change in the price. And it's therefore a really, really big issue.
Carola, there was a headline in the FT yesterday about Nigeria erasing the expected production gain by Saudi Arabia. One of the details in that story is the quality of Nigerian crude. It's different from Saudi oil. And the fact that it's apparently low sulfur oil means that it has a bigger impact on the U.S. market than other places. Could you explain that to me?
Wow, you really have done your homework. Well done. This is a bit of a nerdy issue, but it goes right to the heart of high oil prices. Every crude oil is different. Some is more expensive and others is cheaper. The Nigerian stuff is generally very, very light, which means that refiners can quite easily refine it into gasoline and other products that we really need. They don't need very sophisticated kit to do so. And that's the kind of oil we don't have very much of. In fact, there's pretty much plenty of crude oil of the heavier kind floating around, even on storage tanks on ships outside Iran, for example, who can't sell it. So we really are talking about two kinds of products. And so it's a double whammy that not only have we lost supply in Nigeria, but we've lost supply of exactly the kind of stuff that we really want and need now. And so there you've got the dichotomy. Saudi Arabia has a lot of very nice crude oil, but its spare capacity is the kind of crude oil that is heavier, more difficult to refine. So what you're doing, what you have is an imperfect substitution. You have the Nigerian loss and the substitution from Saudi Arabia, which is not the same kind of crude oil.
And the Nigerian loss, we're talking about hundreds of thousands of barrels less a day. What is the government in Nigeria doing, and what is the oil companies doing?
Well, it's very difficult for both the oil companies and the government. I think this has been a quagmire that has taken decades for Nigeria to fall into. Nigeria is very much the poster child of the oil curse. It's a big country with a big population, so it's always been a more difficult place to operate. But for example, an oil company, the big oil companies there are Shell, Chevron, and Eni. So you've got a Dutchman, an American, and an Italian. And on the one hand, they pay very large sums of money to the Nigerian government. They can't check whether that money ends up being spent on social issues, as governments should spend oil money, or whether that money gets funneled to a Swiss bank account to fund the private education of a corrupt individual. So it's quite difficult for an oil company mm-hmm. to move in that space. In fact, so difficult that some people have said, why you shouldn't be in Nigeria at all, because you're just making things worse. The problem with that is if oil companies were to pull out of Nigeria completely, it would be an absolute catastrophe for the oil price and the markets. Oil would move up very, very quickly. And in terms of the government, I mean, they've never had an easy job, but at the same time, they're not helped by the fact that people like Transparency International rate them very, very low on in terms of corruption, and so it's a real curse.
It's a tough one. Carola Hoyes, Chief Energy Correspondent for the Financial Times, thank you so much.